Hello, it is Debbie again. We're with part two for the Decatur Herald and Review, starting as we usually do with obituaries. We will start with a nationally known name and then go to our local obituaries. A co-founder of Mr. Coffee Brandeis, Cleveland, out of AP, Vincent Marotta, one of the co-founders of the iconic Mr. Coffee brand that helped revolutionize how Americans make their morning brew, died Saturday at his home in suburban Cleveland. He was 91. Now to local. Decatur, Terry L. Heath. Terry L. Heath, 75, of Decatur, died at 7:29 on Friday, July 31, 2015, at Carle Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be held 1:30 p.m. on Thursday, August 6, 2015, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Burial will be at Macon County Memorial Park, Decatur, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Macon Resources Incorporated, Decatur, Illinois. Atwood, Nichols West. Deborah Sue Nichols West, 57, of Atwood, Illinois, went to be with her Lord on Monday, August 3, 2015. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, August 6, 2015, at the MacKill Cemetery, Atwood, Illinois. Visitation will be from 6 to 8, Wednesday, August 5, today, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home in Atwood, 6 to 8 tonight. Decatur. Diana Dean Queen, 71, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, July 26, 2015, at St. Mary's Hospital, surrounded by her family. Funeral services to celebrate the life of Diana Queen will be at 11 a.m. Friday, August 7, 2015, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Burial will be at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the family, be designated at a later date. The family of Diana Queen is being served by Moran and Goble Funeral Home cremation services on Monroe Street in Decatur. Shelbyville, Joanna Elizabeth Spracklin, 90, formerly of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 6 a.m. Monday, August 3, 2015, in Willowbrook in Effingham, Illinois. A mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, August 6, 2015, in Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, Shelbyville, Illinois, with Father John Shome as celebrant. Visitation will be from 6 to 7:45 p.m. Wednesday. That's tonight. Visitation will be 6 to 7:45 p.m. Wednesday in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with prayer service at 7:45 p.m. Burial will be in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be given to Immaculate Conception Catholic Church Building Fund, Shelbyville, Illinois, or Poor Handmaids of Jesus Christ, Donaldson, Indiana. Mount Pulaski. Bernice E. Stahl, of 94, of Mount Pulaski, Illinois, passed away peacefully at 8:38 a.m. Monday, August 3, 2015, at Vonderleith Living Center in Mount Pulaski. Bernice was born on August 9, 1920, in Peoria, Illinois. Private family services will be held at a later date. Funeral services are entrusted to Frick Calvert Schrader Funeral Home in Mount Pulaski. Memorials may be made to the Zion Lutheran Church or Zion Lutheran School of Mount Pulaski or Vonderleith Living Center. Decatur. Mary Elizabeth Welsh, 92, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, August 2, 2015, in Fair Havens Christian Home, surrounded by her family. A mass of Christian burial will be 11 a.m. Thursday, August 6, at St. James Catholic Church. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery. The family would like to request casual fare for services. Memorials may be directed to Saints James and Patrick Catholic Church. The family would like to give special thanks to Father John Burnett of Saints James and Patrick Catholic Church, Safe Haven Hospice, chaplains of St. Mary's Hospital, the sixth floor nurses at St. Mary's Hospital, and the nursing staff at Fair Havens Christian Home for their care and support. The family of Mary Elizabeth Welsh is being served by the Moran and Goebel Funeral Home and Cremation Services on Monroe Street in Decatur. That is the end of this obituary and the end of the obituaries for today. On to agriculture. Stu Ellis, economy could test tractor loyalty. This is for the Herald Review. Some farmers may be proud and others be vehemently upset that they're defined by their green tractor and red pickup truck. I guess this is an editorial. While someone in bib overalls is considered to be a farmer, this stereotypical picture is just as wrong as the first definition is correct. And while the issue of color has become a lightning rod in urban America, the issue of color is also a lightning rod. Let's see. While the issue of color has become a lightning rod issue in urban America, the issue of color is also a lightning rod issue in rural America. Take this simple test and decide which of the following statements is correct. I would never have anything but red equipment on my farm. I would never have anything but green equipment on my farm. Both answers are correct, and it would only take a few minutes for any marketing professional to knock on a few doors on rural Route 4 and verify both statements are deep-set, emotionally charged, taken to the grave, heartfelt beliefs. While you may have your favorite pizza, you would eat one from a different delivery company. While you may be a Cardinals fan, you might watch a Cubs fan if your television only got one channel. However, don't expect a farmer who has driven green equipment all his life to spend any time at the red equipment exhibit at the Farm Progress Show. Don't waste your time tempting him with popcorn, yardsticks, or any other freebie. Nope, not interested. What makes them that way? Dad, granddad, it's in their blood. It's their genes. If genes had color, a geneticist would be able to predict what color tractor would be on the first t-shirt of a newborn farm kid. Family secrets about brand loyalty to the color of farm machinery and particularly John Deere equipment handed down from generation to generation are rooted in the Great Depression. Deere customers were treated very well. Credit was extended, payments could come late without penalty, and a corporate attitude of helping save their customers until the next farming season spawned some of the fiercest loyalty that brand managers ever knew. This is not to say that someone with Deere Case IH equipment in their machine shed doesn't have an implement of another color. They might, but there's some rules. First and foremost, it won't be a red piece of Case IH if everything else is Deere. Secondly, the converse is also true. And thirdly, an off-brand is welcome in the machine shed if that particular implement has features not offered by either Deere or Case IH. There are a couple of dynamics which have developed that will challenge this green-blooded, red-blooded mentality. Green blood, red blood mentality, and economists in the farm equipment industry will be closely watching. The overall driver is the farm economy, which will negatively impact every farming operation. The first dynamic is equipment pricing. As equipment gets more efficient with greater use of technology, equipment makers will raise the price to recover their investment. But with corn and soybean prices at or below break-even levels, how fast will farmers reach out for the new hardware, knowing it will be difficult to pay for? The second dynamic is brand loyalty. In the face of higher costs for equipment and lower farm revenue, will that loyalty remain when a piece of replacement equipment is needed and if it's within the budget but is in the wrong color? We come back to the definition of a farmer having a green tractor and a red pickup. He is just lucky that red pickup trucks weren't built and sold by Case IH. End of the editorial. Stu Ellis is an observer of the Central Illinois agricultural scene. And on the breaking news front, from the state, panel rejects Rauner's plan to close prison camps museum. Kurt Erickson. Springfield. A panel of lawmakers sent a message to Governor Bruce Rauner Wednesday. Don't close the Illinois State Museum in Springfield or the Hardin County Work Camp in Southern Illinois. On 272 votes, members of the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability recommended the two facilities, as well as satellite operations of the museum in Whittington, Lewiston, Chicago, and Lockport, stay open. Three Republicans on the panel bucked the Republicans governor planned to shutter the facilities, including state reps Don Moffat of Gilson, Raymond Poe of Springfield, and Mike Eunice of East Peoria. Moffat said the museum should find ways to generate revenue during tough budget times. I think we need to look at a modest fee for those attending, he said. Moffat said. State Senator Don Trotter, Democrat, Chicago, also came to the defense of the 280-inmate camp, which employs 60 workers north of Cave In Rock. The hardened work camp also has an intrinsic value, Trotter said. The advisory vote came a day after the Illinois Senate passed a measure requiring the state to keep the museum sites open. The Bronner proposed closing the sites in July as part of the ongoing budget impasse, triggering a review process by the Legislative Commission because each facility employs a large number of state workers. In arguing in favor of the closure of the 35-year-old work camp, the Illinois Department of Corrections said each of the employees would be able to transfer to nearby prisons. Closing the camp is estimated to save $1 million. The state also would be able to avoid having to spend as much as $9.8 million in upgrades. But, said State Senator Gary Forby, Democrat Benton, the camp is an important part of the southern Illinois economy. The last governor came along and closed the prison at Tams and a youth prison in Murfreesboro. Now this governor wants to close the work camp at another juvenile detention center in Benton. What else can they do to my district? Fenton said. When the prison opened 30-some years ago, nobody up north wanted it. We decided we wanted it. We'd take the job. We don't have factories, Forby said. State Representative Tim Butler, Republican Springfield, said he was pleased with the vote on the museum, but he said the loss of tourism spending in the community, the cost of closing the 138-year-old facility, and the potential for lawsuits surrounding the closure could come back to haunt Rauner. I think at the end of the day, closing the state museum is going to be a money loser for the state. I think it's going to be a real problem for us. Butler agrees with Moffat that the museum should consider charging a fee to help offset the $4.8 million cost to operate the facility. Rauner signaled Tuesday he was moving forward with the closures regardless of the commission's vote when his administration issued layoff notices for workers at the museum. Continuing, improvement projects underway at Camp Butler Cemetery, Riverton. Two major projects underway at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Sangamon County, where about 25,000 military veterans are buried. This summer, the cemetery is undergoing a $2.1 million irrigation system installation and a $2.3 million effort to realign nearly 7,000 headstones. Federal money is paying for both projects. Sprinklers should be installed by this fall, but realigning the headstones will take until fall of 2016. Headstones can shift due to the heavy rain or freezing and thawing. Cemetery officials want them all the same heights and in a near-perfect line. Camp Butler opened in 1861 as a place for Civil War troops. It eventually became a prisoner of war camp. It is now a cemetery where veterans are buried dating back to the Civil War. End of the article. Illinois State Fair to host activities for senior citizens. 4 hours ago, AP in Springfield. Senior citizens will have their own day at the Illinois State Fair this year. The Illinois Department on Aging says it will host activities for seniors throughout the fair, but Monday, August 17th is Senior Day. That's when attendees age 60 and older are admitted to the fair for free. The department will have the Illinois Senior Spelling Bee State Finals, the annual grandchild contest, and the not-so-newlywed game. The Illinois State Fair runs from August 13th to August 23rd in Springfield. State agencies, organizations, and private companies will also be available to offer information about services to help older adults. Those include AARP, Blue Cross, Blue Shield of Illinois, and the U.S. Social Security Administration. End of that AP article. In sports, celebrating a good time. No, celebrating a good thing, excuse me. Justin Kahn for the Herald and Review. Decatur. There aren't many who have been to as many Decatur celebrations as David Littlefield, and even fewer who have attended the Ursula back pro tennis classic as frequently. And Littlefield isn't even from Decatur, nor has he ever made residence here. But he's considering he worked the Beck tournament in some capacity for the United States Tennis Association, the USTA, for most of his 17 years. He spent around 5 months of his life here. Littlefield is from West Palm Beach, Florida, and still makes his home there, but he got into tennis officiating as a hobby in the early 1980s, but eventually became his career. He first came to the Beck tournament as a chair umpire and moved up the ladder until becoming a pro circuit supervisor the last 7 years. I haven't missed many through the 17 years, maybe a couple, Littlefield said. As a pro circuit supervisor, Littlefield's in charge of all things tennis at the tournaments he attends. The final say for a ruling has to be made on the court, Littlefield said. If there's a problem between a chair umpire and a player, I come out and listen to the umpire, then listen to the player, and my decision would be the final say. I'm also responsible for paying the players and, along with the tournament director, scheduling the matches. Beck tournament director Chuck Kuhl has become friends with Littlefield through the years. They don't want the tournament director to be the bad guy, so David runs the tournament and I do everything else. I raise the money, schedule all the community events, make sure the players have water and towels, Kuhl said. David has to handle the headaches. But I think the real reason he comes is for the Decatur celebration. Little has established a routine for his annual 10-day stop in Decatur, and that routine includes the Decatur celebration. I think that's little should be say be Littlefield. Littlefield has established a routine for his annual 10-day stop in Decatur, and that routine includes the Decatur celebration. Over the years, I've kind of figured it all out as far as where I like to stay and what restaurants to go to. I'm a creature of habit, Littlefield said, and I go to the celebration every year with Chuck. We make it a point to go. If you see Chuck there, you'll usually see me at least one of the nights. That's a big plus of this tournament. It's something to look forward to. Not many USTA tournament sites have been able to keep going for 17 years, though there are some in the 30s. Littlefield said the reasons for Beck tournament's longevity are easy to see. The players are treated well, and there's a nice little city to come to. If the player hasn't moved too far up the rankings, it's the place they want to come back to, Littlefield said. It's just a nicely run event. End of the article by Kahn. Next article, Tim Kaine from H&R, the entertainment editor, says, in the week leading up to Decatur celebration, I'm sharing a few of my stories tied to the event. I didn't see the panda fly away, but I heard about it for a long time, and 5 years later, continuing to answer questions and hear more stories about it. In 2010, Decatur celebration creator Fred Puglia's final year, one of the entries in the parade was to be an inflatable panda balloon named Fred Puglia the Panda. The balloon was not tethered properly in the parade staging area and got away from those tending it. Those who saw the inflated balloon floating away will never forget the sight of getting smaller and smaller as it floated into a beautiful clear blue sky. Eric Dawson, son of H&R managing editor Dave Dawson, took a photo of the balloon's ascent that was featured on the cover of our website the rest of the weekend. In the newsroom, we pulled together the story from disparate sources. Sheila Smith and I had different pieces to work at, and the hilarity escalated when Jim Varel took a phone call in the office about 4 hours later from a man in Lovington who said approximately, "I got your balloon." It had flown about 20 miles and landed in a cornfield. Videographer Adam Kasner and photographer Kelly Hoff drove to the site where it was tethered, completing a fantastic story. It always one of the first things I think of when I ponder covering celebration. Probably the most entertaining thing was seeing how Varel reacted to being the first contact. The story was worked for about 12 hours between the bunch of us. I went to see KISS Army, a KISS tribute band, and ran into radio personality Scott Buzzboom, who had been present at the site along with members of the Eisenhower football team when the balloon escaped. The Eisenhower players were to have piloted the balloon in the parade. I heard a commotion and turned around to see it clearing the law enforcement center, Buzzboom told me as we waited for KISS Army to start. The guys turned to me and said, "Now what do we do?" I said, "Unless one of you can fly, we're out of the parade." And that was the quote that made our story complete. End of the article. And for those of you who are Dear Abby fans, we will go into this. We don't usually get into it, but the news was sort of light, and here in Life and Entertainment is a Dear Abby section. There's three letters here. Dear Abby, I'm 21 and on my second marriage. My husband of 2 years is every girl's dream man, the kindest, gentlest, most patient guy. He loves me for everything, including my flaws. I honestly believe he's the only one who could ever handle me. So tell me, why am I cheating on him? I never thought I could find myself in this situation. I have a lot happening in my life, but there's no excuse for why I'm straying from such an amazing husband. I love him, but when I get a text, I hope so badly it's from the other man, and when it's from my husband, I feel disappointment. We see the other man. He works for my parents. The situation's messy, and I don't know what to do. I can't tell my husband. It would ruin his life. I'd rather just leave him without giving any reason than tell him the truth. I want to leave him and live on my own life, but I'm afraid to be on my own. I don't know why I stay. I'm lost and confused. Can I have some advice, please? Signed, Reckless in Florida. Abby says, Dear Reckless, you're playing at matrimony as though it were a game instead of a deep, enduring partnership. Staying married to someone because you're afraid to be on your own is doing both of you a disservice. If you think leaving your husband for no reason would be less hurtful than telling him the truth, you're mistaken. You owe it to him to level with him about the affair so he won't blame himself for your leaving. When you do, I strongly recommend you get counseling from a licensed mental health professional to help you slow down and more carefully consider what you're doing before you marry a third time. Next letter. Dear Abby, I've been married for 3.5 years to my wonderful husband. We're both 51. It's my first marriage and his second. He complains that I'm not sensual enough for his needs or intimate enough. I've been with only two men in my life, but have dated a lot. I'm Catholic and have had no complaints from my ex-fiance. My question is, how do I become more sensual and intimate? His complaints are vague. We see a marriage counselor every 3 weeks. I can ask the counselor. I can ask a close friend. I can buy a book, but I thought I'd also give you a try. Signed, Not Good Enough in New Hampshire. Dear Not Good, honest communication is essential to a strong marriage. So the person to ask is your husband, because only he can answer this question. I'm glad the two of you are in marriage counseling, and I recommend you raise the subject during your next session. Because your husband seems capable of only vague answers when you have asked for clarification, your counselor may be able to encourage him to open up. If that's not possible, then the two of you should consult a licensed sex therapist. End of Dear Abby for today. From the Home and Garden section, House Works. The secret is taking small bites. When do you find time to get done all that stuff you write about? You'd be amazed at how often I hear that. From friends, from family, from neighbors, from loyal Houseworks readers. From the husbands of loyal Houseworks readers, I now reveal my secret. I nibble. Virtually every day, I try to get a little something done. Usually, it's not much at all. On a recent day, for example, I had an hour between walking the dog and eating lunch, so I cut back some spent perennial flowers and pulled weeds in the vegetable garden. The next day, I messed with parts for the wind chimes I've been making for the patio. The truth is, I've been nibbling at that project for weeks because I'm waiting for a sale at the home center before I buy the electric conduit I'll cut up for the chimes themselves. On that same shopping trip to come, I'll pick up a spool of braided fishing line, a package of steel wool, some quarter-inch oak, and a bag of insecticide for the lawn. Spreading that should last occupy me for another hour one afternoon the next week. Depending on the season, snow shoveling, lawn mowing take about an hour each. So does rough tilling the flower and vegetable beds in the fall and raking them smooth in the spring. Planting flowers and veggies take a bit longer, but I manage to divide that up over at least a couple of days. Potatoes, snow peas, and onions can be planted early. Then a month later, there's a positive tornado of activity as salad, veggies, and summer annuals all go into the ground. But I try to save that chore for a day off, so I'm not hurried. You see, when you have a whole day off, you can take more than a nibble, maybe even a full-fledged bite. On a typical day, I try to put in as much as 3 hours. Any more than that, of course, and it really wouldn't be a proper day off. A day off is a good time for painting a room, which really does take about 3 hours, assuming you spend an hour the day before shoving the furniture in the middle and covering it all with plastic drop cloths. Sidebar, that is, by the way, that's all they're good for. A drop cloth you want to walk on without slipping in wet paint. Go with canvas. Okay, sidebar. That, by the way, is all that they're good for. Oh, plastic drop cloths. For a drop cloth you want to walk on without slipping in wet paint, go with canvas, not the plastic. Next paragraph. House cleaning and laundry also are good day off jobs. If I haven't neglected those for too long, I can combine them in a single afternoon. I might even have time to wash the truck, which takes about a half an hour. It's a 96. I don't wax it anymore. And then there's vacation weeks. I never take off more than a week at a time because any more would be far too exhausting. During a vacation week, I generally take on a major project such as digging a new garden bed or painting the shop or laying a tile floor. You need several days for such a project because they have to be done in stages with drying and beer time in between. Exterior painting, for example, means one day to scrape and caulk, one day to prime, 2 days to paint the walls, and another two for the trim, two coats each. You could combine some of that, I suppose, but it's tough when you limit yourself to 4-hour days. It is, after all, vacation. No sense overdoing. So this is Steve Batty in Lincoln, Nebraska, that does the houseworks. Finish off part two of the Decatur Herald and Review off the heraldreview.com website. We're doing Everyday Cheapsteak, more ways to slash your food bill. Could you use an extra 25 or 50 next week? If you get motivated, there's a big chance you can slash your family's food bill by that much, maybe more each week without sacrificing health and nutrition. And that will be tax-free cash you'll have in hand, not money that requires more overtime or a garage sale before you can get your hands on it. There's not one single way to reduce food costs significantly and consistently. It has to be a combination of strategies. Buy right, eat out less, and cook at home more. Coupons. You know that couponing can be very effective, but you have to do it right. It'll be just a waste of time and money. Check sites like The Grocery Game, my favorite, and Coupon Mom. The secret is to combine a manufacturer's coupon with a sale. That requires that you keep your eye on sales and also hold on to coupons, but not so long they expire. Think seasonal. We know that fresh fruits and vegetables are necessary for a healthy diet. 5 servings a day for optimal health. Pound for pound, fresh produce can be much cheaper than fast food, chips, cookies, candy, soda pop, or any prepackaged, preprocessed convenience food items. There's a catch, though. You have to buy what's in season. How do you know? Look around the produce department. If it's $4.99 a pound, chances are it's not in season. When apples are 3 pounds for 99 cents, bananas are 69 cents a pound, and red flame seedless grapes are $1.77 a pound, you know they're in season. There's always bargains in the produce department. Adjust your tastes and expectations to fit within them. The other subtitles here as we close out this half are set limits. So know your per unit price you won't spend above. Control portions. Dr. Dean Adel, of radio fame and author of Eat, Drink, and Be Merry, says the healthiest diet is not that is one is low fat or high carb. The healthiest way is to eat less, small amounts of large variety of foods. It's hard work for our bodies to digest and convert food. Dr. Adel maintains we wear our bodies out prematurely when we overeat. You can learn what constitutes a portion on the package label. A single portion of breakfast cereals, 4 ounces. Tomorrow morning, measure out a half cup. Get prepared for a single serving that looks a little puny. Chances are great that you're having seconds and thirds. And the final advice, get creative. You set your mind to it, you'll be amazed how many ways you can prepare rice or how to stretch a pound of ground beef to feed a group. Use up the items in your refrigerator before dipping in your stockpile or buying a new supply. End of Everyday Mary at Everyday Cheapsteak. End of part two for Wednesday, August 5th, 2015. Talk to you again on the 12th.